Everybody, welcome to Watchmen with Jay, Jack, and Matt. My name is Jay.
I'm Matt.
And I'm frustrated.
And welcome to the show. How's everybody doing today?
Well, clearly Jack's frustrated, but I thought he was the one that hung up the chief of police.
I was, but I give up. I just give up.
Oh, man. Well, Jack may have given up, but I haven't on this fantastic show led by Damon Lindelof. It's episode 2. I freaking loved it. Everything about it. The continued Ozymandias kind of pullback on what's going on with him. Angela's story. The introduction of Will. And the reveal of who Will is, which we all theorized on our previous week's episode, and kind of the fallout of Chief of Police Judd's death and the reveal, and the kind of continued little side stories, especially with the American Hero show with Hood of Justice. So a lot to unpack in this episode, and excited to talk about it with you fine gentlemen.
Yeah, there was a lot that happened, and I kept my notes are just like probably what Rorschach's journal looks like. It's just a bunch of notes that don't make sense. They jump from right to left, and they're non sequitur. So hopefully we can make sense of it, even though we don't really break this down in chronologic order. Jack, what stood out with you for this episode? Like the most like
that Will's not human.
Okay.
I think Will's human. Why do you think he's not human?
Well, he's eating a hard-boiled egg, right?
Uh-huh.
He reached into the boiling water without a glove or anything else and pulled the egg out.
Uh-huh. Plus he drank the coffee, piping hot.
Drank the coffee really fast, piping hot.
But that's your big takeaway from the episode?
Well, it's just saying, how does one do that?
Well,
screaming. He was able to get out of the handcuffs. He was able to string up Judd, even though he's in a wheelchair.
So in classic Lindelof fashion, a lot of questions and not a lot of answers. So I'm excited to dig into that. Matt, what do you think it is?
I mean, can you reach into a boiling pot of hot water and pull out an egg?
Well, let's save that for our deep dive discussion here, because I do want to discuss it. But before we do that, just Matt, your kind of initial take thoughts here.
My initial thought and takeaway was, I can't believe I was right about something. So on our Facebook page, where we posted, the podcast, I had posted two pictures. A picture that was clearly shown again and highlighted in this episode of Judd and his father. Mm-hmm. And I took a screenshot or what have you of what I thought looked to be like a man that was very similar in age from the very beginning of that very pilot episode of who kind of looked like a younger version of Judd's father in a KKK outfit. And I don't know, like, I just feel like pretty justified. I'm like, yes. I was pretty kind of, I mean, aside from me tooting my own horn here, I was just like, wow, I couldn't believe that happened. Really like seeing all of the little kind of nuggets of Watchmen scattered throughout, like the moths flying around trying to get pictures of stuff.
Yep.
A reference to the Mothman. There was a little silhouette shown. It was very brief. It was a painted on the side of a building, but it was a definite nod to the comic. It was two people embracing each other. The silhouette was painted on the wall, I think, as we were getting ready to go to the newspaper stand scene. I think that's where it appears. It was very early on in the episode, and if I mean, it just briefly happens, and you're like, what? So, nice little subtle call to the comic. Yeah, those are my first takeaways. I mean, there was a lot of cool stuff that happened. What stood out for you? Well, I guess you already said that, Jay.
Yeah, kind of. I really, really dug everything about it. It feels like it's expanding the universe. I've seen some people say they feel like this isn't connected to Watchmen whatsoever. It's just its own thing, and I will argue and debate them till the cows come home, because I think this definitely fits well within the Watchmen universe and continues the story, especially seemingly with whatever Ozymandias is up to. I loved it. Absolutely loved it. And excited to talk about it with you all. But before we get into that, I want to thank the people that make this show possible, our patrons over at patreon.com/JayandJack. If you enjoy this show and all of the other shows on the Jay and Jack Network, head on over to patreon.com/JayandJack and become a patron today. Whether you give $1 or more a month, it all helps make these shows possible. It's patreon.com/JayandJack.
I was going to say, I was shocked that Matt was right. Just wanted to put that out there.
Let's jump into this. Matt, my advice for you, having podcasted with a guy that was right about one thing years ago, don't let it be the one thing you hang your cap on. Like, continue to evolve and push yourself to, you know, continue to improve as a podcast.
Should you be giving advice since you've never been right? Just saying.
I've been right a couple times. I still make as big a deal about it as you do. That's all.
Okay.
Right, many a time. Pretty sure.
I didn't go on for the first 5 minutes of a podcast saying how right I was.
But anyways, kudos, Matt. Kudos, Matt, to you.
Thanks. He's not going to let me forget that one either.
It's like, again, he was right the one time. He poo-poos on everybody else if they're ever right, and he just, you know,
I poo-poo on everybody else.
Years. Yeah, you poo-poo.
I poo-poo on everybody else.
Well,
you poo-poo.
Let's start since you guys want to talk about that. Let's start with the first, I guess, part of this episode, which dealt with going back in time. And at first, I was just like, "Is this World War II that's happening?" Yeah. And then it's a reveal like, oh no, this is World War I.
Yeah.
You can tell by the helmets.
Well, that, and because once, yeah, the German was being, I was like, oh, but and I was like, well, there's no Hitler picture behind him.
No.
And then, so it kind of gives more backstory to Will's journey.
Dad's?
This is seemingly before the events in 1921 with the Tulsa Massacre. And I think, again, just really masterful storytelling. And, you know, people could attribute the civil rights movement in the 50s and 60s to the African-American service men that were in World War II, seeing the freedoms that people in Europe had. And it's fascinating to even bring it to, you know, World War I and how that, impacted the civil rights movement. So, again, a really interesting and engaging way to tell that story.
It really doubles down on that note, you know, watch over this boy. It's like, it's not just that note.
Yeah.
It's like we get this other side to the note, which is a pamphlet.
Yeah.
We also had, he's reading the pamphlet, the propaganda pamphlet, an American soldier on a horse spits on him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
So you're like going, what are they fighting for?
Yeah.
What is democracy?
Yeah.
Right.
And, just really, really poignant visuals and words. Also love how Jack pronounces pamphlet. Might be my favorite part of this podcast.
I was at least right once.
I totally called it on how Jack was going to pronounce it too. I made that prediction.
All right, Matt.
And then I mean, really, there's kind of some main story arcs here, but probably the biggest is Angela and Will, and kind of where it takes her. Because Will doesn't make any sense that he was able to string up Chief of Police Judd.
Not and, human.
But yeah, there's just little moments where, and in the first thing is when he kind of downs the coffee like it's nothing and it's piping hot, it's fresh. And even Angela takes note of that. And,
yeah.
And later we have him, yeah, take the egg out of the thing. So Jackie brought this up kind of in the intro to the show. But what's the deal with Will? Because as we see in the flashbacks, he seems like a perfectly normal child. So what happened from that point? Or was he always, you know, superhuman, metahuman? Or did something happen after that with these powerful friends that he has? Could the powerful friend be Ozymandias? That's how I kind of felt it. But is there a
I think that's how what it is.
But yeah, so gentlemen, what's your thoughts? Jack, you think it's Ozymandias giving him some type of superhuman powers?
I think that's what they were showing us with the whole play that was going on.
Well, it's interesting. Okay, so Will having these special powers, and I mean, maybe it's something to do with those pills because he wanted to take that pill.
Yep.
But then I also had this thought, and I'm just jumping to Topher because he's building a floating castle that looks like Ozymandias' castle.
Yep.
It did, yeah.
That's the second time we've seen somebody building what is Ozymandias' castle. First episode, it was Dr. Manhattan. This one, it's Topher, yeah.
Can we say those were cool Legos?
Super cool Legos, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's next level Legos when they can float. He also destroys it just like Dr. Manhattan, which I don't know. It made me think like, okay, is Dr. Manhattan influencing kids? Like, I mean, obviously you have Will saying that he is Dr. Manhattan, that he can replicate himself as people, but...
Do you think it's a red herring, or do you think that's legit?
I think it's... I mean, man, it's tough with this show.
Or does it tie into seemingly Ozymandias' I don't know if it's quite an obsession, but interest in Dr. Manhattan's story... in that, you know, how he became Dr. Manhattan, and is that the connection possibly to Will and his superhuman abilities? Maybe Ozymandias has figured out some way to give certain attributes of Dr. Manhattan's abilities to Will, and is Topher a part of that as well because he's building Ozymandias' castle? I think that's a very astute observation.
Yeah, I don't know where Will's influence is coming from, but clearly he has something more, and he does have some special gift. I know we'll probably mention it at some point, but oh my gosh, they ended with Eggman by the Beastie Boys, which I thought was really, really great way to kind of pull back to Jack's obsession with him eating eggs. And so I keep thinking about like that name as like his superhero like name, you know, as Eggman. Yeah.
That's cool. I got that.
The Eggman.
And who's the Walrus? That's the real question. So Jack, you think it's Ozymandias. Matt, are you in that camp?
Oh, see, okay. The thing at the end, I know we're totally non sequitur on this, and that's fine. The thing at the end with the big magnet coming down and the cord, that to me reminded me of something that the Night Owl would do, like using a spacecraft, you know, kind of thing, and maybe just a little bit further, because Ozymandias is kind of keeping to himself, and even though he has those crazy clone kids. you know, he, for all intents and purposes, he's dead. So, but Night Owl would not be the type of person that would give people pills. So that's what's throwing me about that whole connection. So, cause I totally thought like, oh, that seems like something Night Owl would do.
Well, Night Owl 1 died, right? And so Night Owl 2, we don't know his whereabouts. Right? Have we not
right.
gotten anything from him?
We have nothing to go on Night Owl 2. And I would almost say that, I mean, he's probably the age of what the original Night Owl would be. So it seems like he would be passing it on to yet another Night Owl. So
do you think we're going to have a Night Owl 3? Or, you know, Angela's, is her superhero name or cop name, is it just Night or is it...
Sister Night.
So mm-hmm. is that in some way related to Night Owl, or is that just something completely different? Just Night's a popular
that's a good name. Point.
Who knows? So last kind of big thing about Will that it does tie into Angela is the revelation, because she goes and does kind of a DNA test, is that she is Will's granddaughter. Which I think we talked about, are they related in some way? And they are, which makes it all the more interesting. Especially in that she doesn't know who he is.
Right.
Yeah. Because
maybe he died years ago.
Well, or I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't know I mean, how would you not know who your grandfather is, I guess, at that point? But
only if they're estranged or something along those lines, right?
Was she adopted, maybe? Maybe she was put in foster care?
Sure.
But he said your parents never told you about your grandfather. So that, to me, feels more like an estranged parent or grandparent than she was adopted. Right?
Right.
To me, but well, it could still be an adoption, like, you know, an adoption play or something. But
yeah, and I mean, we know that she also she wasn't born in Vietnam, right? But
she was
born in Vietnam. That's right. So it just makes me wonder, like, who her parents were there, how they got there. Maybe they, I mean, to me, that almost like connects directly to Dr. Manhattan, because we know he spent time there, but we also know the comedian spent time in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. So, right. Based on the comic book,
yeah.
So, and the movie. So, I mean that happens in the movie. So.
Yes, it does.
I think.
What are your thoughts? Who do you think he's connected to, Will?
Me? I think I kind of alluded to it in my opening. I think it is Ozymandias in some way, because I think that might be the deflection, right? But Ozymandias was the main kind of mover of chess pieces that led to the conclusion of, you know, the interdimensional squid monster, you know, blowing up the cities or whatever. And to me, it would seem he would still be in the driver's seat by the looks of things. But knowing Damon and how he works, the first thing you think is never going to be the thing. So, you know, I could absolutely see being some out of left field individual or group that's kind of giving Will these powers, possibly through those pills and so forth. But my gut take is, well, yeah, Ozymandias is the one doing this because, you know, he's the smartest man alive. And
but could Will be a clone?
Making a play. Could be, but I feel like that's dangerous to go down that path, and that's where I'm not 100% sold that, you know, his servants are clones. It could be something different. Clone, I think, is probably the easiest, most, you know, Occam's razor answer to that theory. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, the whole, I mean, we see the body kind of burnt, you know, I mean, the flesh is burnt, so... whether or not they're really machines underneath that, a la Westworld. I mean, I know that was something that we talked about in the last podcast. You know, it was like, are they machines? Are they robots? You know, what are they?
Yeah, but I think clones is the most logical answer. But again, this is a Damon Lindelof show. Your first take is not always guaranteed to be the right take, even though, Matt, you were right last week and throughout.
All right, here's another wild take here.
Yeah.
Dr. Manhattan and Ozymandias, we know that they're kind of opposites in the fact that they were, but what if they're actually working together?
Well, they kind of did at the end of the comic, right? Like,
right.
Manhattan, basically, he killed Rorschach to kind of keep him quiet, right?
Right.
So I think they do kind of, even though they're going about things in different ways, or Dr. Manhattan's essentially a god, so has no care for the activities of humanity, but at least they have this seemingly mutual understanding of things. So I do think that's an observant call out, Matt.
I mean, he could have created these people for him, like, yeah, as worker drones or something like that. Like,
and again, so, Will calling that out, and again, saying he's 105, he doesn't look 105. I mean, he looks old, but he doesn't look 105.
He's pretty smart for 105.
And he's pretty coherent for 105.
Which, I mean, all three of us know a lot of 105-year-old people, too. So
I've only personally known, I don't know if she made it to 105, definitely 104.
Yeah, 104.
And was not that spry or adept. But again, I'm sure there's ones out there.
I'm sure there are, but again, you go back to the hot water.
Yeah, exactly. It's obviously he's either
that has to be some, that has to be something going on where I just don't think he's real. I don't think he's human.
We're all real, man.
Mary,
alive, man.
No, I'm gonna stay. I know you've said it 100 times today that, and I get the Damon Lindelof thing. It's never your first, but then what is it? Because there's no way you could put your hand in boiling hot water and not
take the pills.
React.
Whatever those pills are, right? It gives him his abilities, right? And that's why. Probably didn't even want to reveal it, but you know, he took the pill, and after she left, that's how he was able to get out of the cuffs or whatever. But don't want to spend all of our time talking about that. But I do think it's absolutely one of the main driving forces of this narrative. Let's go into Angela's story here, Jack. I think we know you love flashbacks, and we got some for her going back to the White Knight and kind of showing the connection that she had with Judd, and it does beg the question, especially when we find out later that Judd had a Ku Klux Klan uniform, presumably his father's, from that picture, in his closet, quite literally skeletons in his closet. thoughts here on the flashback sequence? You know, it's almost Christmas.
Two minutes away.
And she seems to kill the original person, but there's another person there that shoots her, has the gun over her, but doesn't kill her, obviously, but we don't see why. And to me, once we find out this...
It was Judd.
Right? That's...
Yeah, I think it's... And plus, when he says 40 houses got attacked, they knew our addresses. Well, who would know the addresses? Mm-hmm. It had to be someone inside.
At that time, right? They weren't masked or anonymous at that time, so that could be it. But
still, having 40, that's a lot of information.
Also, them being the only two that survived.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I really like the call out, like the whole, like, so many minutes till, or 2 minutes till midnight, you know, and they're, you know, it's a seemingly lovely scene. We think that we're going to get a little action, and so does Cal.
but Santa broke it up.
I kind of empathize with Cal here because I'm like, I want to know what that gift was.
We never found out
what's in the box. Damn you, JJ. Damn you.
We also find out after that, you know, she wakes up in the hospital, we find out about her partner, who is Doyle. Mm-hmm. And even though I mistakenly didn't know this and was confused in the last episode because I was busy taking notes, but Topher is not her kid.
Nope,
so
they all aren't her kid. They're all Doyle's kids, right?
All of them?
Yeah, I thought she adopted, because he mentioned all three.
Again, taking notes, I was writing, I was right. But
Jim Beaver, the actor that was on the porch,
yes,
the grandfather,
yes, yep,
okay. So I didn't get his name, but I know it's Jim Beaver from
So but yes. I looked it up on IMDb. The character's name is Andy.
Yes, Andy. I wonder if that's going to come to play more. He mentioned the Red Fredations thing. We actually got more of an explanation of what that was.
Is Andy in the 7th Cavalry?
I don't want to stereotype these people that I don't know, but he looks like he could be. I don't know.
Well, just because his you know, about the check and everything, yep. And there's a lot of friction. There's a lot of friction there.
Yeah.
Between Angela and Andy. I mean, it just was like, what are you doing here? It's my day. No, get out of here. I mean,
yep.
There's something there.
Absolutely. And, you know, we get more of that sense. And I think something the show is approaching, interestingly, is I don't want to use the phrase showing both sides or whatever. But I feel like, you know, the whole Red Fredations thing, or saying the Libfords, which I think was what the one gentleman, the news stand guy, said. But it's just interesting just to kind of have all their perspectives on, you know, what Robert Redford's presidency has done, which is seemingly more left leaning. Whereas the Nixon kind of followers are, you know, I guess the more conservative leaning. And that's where, is it Joe Keane, the senator that was at the party?
Yes.
Is the more, I guess, conservative leaning, which there's more for that character, I think, that will be seen, especially if he's running against Robert Redford. And does he have some kind of connection, especially being a friend or, you know, Judd's wife working for him at one point in time? Is there a deeper connection between him and the Cavalry and kind of all of these events that are happening?
Most likely.
I find interesting to see how that will play out. And if we've seen Joe Keane, are we going to have Robert Redford make a guest appearance on this
show?
No
kidding. I kept wondering, like, so, I mean, they've clearly put Robert Redford in the driver's seat as far as being the president. But I know he's also tried to retire several times from acting, and Marvel pulled him back in, so who knows?
Come on, it's a few scenes, Robert.
Sure,
suck it up.
Interesting thing about Joe Keane is that newspaper stand scene that occurs. One of the guys mentions that Keane is a clone of his dad. So, not to like emphasize.
I didn't hear that.
Well, I went back because I was trying to, before we recorded, and for the listeners that may not remember from our first episode, but we jump right into recording this right after we watch it. So aside from our notes, we have no other input on this.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know more about... Fresh take, first take. But I wanted to know more about this girl that is coming to pick up all these newspapers. We get her in this kind of throwaway scene. The newspaper stand. What's that?
Thank you for calling that out. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, I mean, you could almost forget it with all of this other lush and in-depth, you know, character development that's occurring. But she comes to pick up these newspapers. The newspaper guy says, well, I don't have any news. Nova Express, which I don't know if that's a comic book. You know, or just a magazine. Who knows what that will be. But clearly the girl that's picking up these things says something about, like, you know, well, she doesn't, or she reads all of them. So whoever she's delivering them for, I keep wondering if we'll get something more you know.
It has to be something to it. Why would they have
Right. Right, like who is she delivering these for? So, sorry not to get us sidetracked there, but
no, to
mention her, and I'm just curious as to, like, is she delivering?
I think that's a great call out.
Is she delivering them to Lori? Because Lori would be an older woman at this point, and she would be, you know. I guess kind of like her taking after her mother, Silk Spectre. I guess she would be kind of held up maybe in a nursing home someplace, like sending out other young girls to do her bidding. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here as to like who this her could be. You know, there's not a lot of hers in the Watchmen universe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of through Angela's kind of story arc in this episode, where Will kind of gives her this seemingly truth that she doesn't believe in. She then goes on a journey to find out if what he said was true. And she took it literally to, you know, when he said there's skeletons in the closet, then she found a Ku Klux Klan robes and hood in that closet.
Right.
And then tries to get answers from Will. And he is taken away by whatever higher influence is kind of giving him whatever he needs to.
Well, he doesn't answer it either. He goes, was it in the closet?
Yeah. Well, he's just kind of like, yeah, he kind of plays coy with it. And she is kind of, you know, left there without the person that's murdered.
Without a ride home.
Yeah. Yeah. Where does Angela side on this? It's a classic kind of story trope where our hero or whomever is kind of what they thought was, you know, their normal world has been completely turned upside down. And it'll be curious to see kind of where she takes it from there. But I thought it was a really engaging story for her.
Well, I agree. The person she looked up to probably most could turn out to be someone she'll end up hating.
Do you think there's some chance that Judd is actually a good guy and he just really liked his dad's Klan outfit?
No, I think there's just too many. I mean, again, it's Lindelof, so you never know. But there's too many clues pointing the other way.
He's Lindelof. He's not Shyamalan, so it's not twist for twist's sake. So.
Yeah. I think for storytelling wise, I think Judd is a bad guy or was a bad guy. Mm-hmm. There's just too much there that's too many coincidences
Another interesting callback to the comics is, you know, the discovery of the wardrobe behind the wardrobe, right? Mm-hmm. Like the fact that when they're investigating the comedian's house, you know, they find kind of behind his own closet, they find more stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So
Rorschach does, and I guess the
Night Owl, after. Doesn't
yeah,
it?
Night Owl, yep.
Yeah.
And the garden she has a very Night Owl-esque, right?
Right, yeah. I wanted to make sure that we mentioned that. But yeah, those glasses totally reminded me of Night Owl, something that he would have. I know we mentioned briefly the attacks on Nixonville, and you know, I wanted to mention
tricky,
at least
I like the Tricky Dick idol.
Yeah, I wanted to mention how Red Scare kind of reacts to the death of Judd, you know, and how he's kind of like, you know, he's even beating somebody. What is he? Is he beating somebody up or is he yelling at somebody when he says, I'm not a Nazi, I'm a communist? I think he's punching someone.
I think he is. I think he was punching someone. And then he had Angela saying, I'm not going to get involved in this. And then she kills the guy.
She definitely gets her fist bloody, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't think she killed him, but yeah, definitely beats him to a pulp.
He looked dead to me.
The 7th Cavalry definitely aligns themselves with Nixon. We know that much now because they all somewhat live there. And I'm just running through my notes, so please just bear in mind that I'm jumping from point to point. But I wanted to make sure that we also, I saw it just for a brief moment there, but when she does go and I guess it does kind of, there is a little bit of a, you know, lineage here, because she does react to the attacker, but then immediately she takes that cup to get the DNA testing.
Right.
And while she's in that living museum, you see this really brief photo of William's Dreamland Theater, which is where it began. And I thought it was interesting that the name William was coming up and related to that first theater that we saw in the attack. So So whether it was named after our Will that we know or somebody else, kind of an interesting call out.
Great call out.
Yeah, and I think the meat of this episode, which you know, definitely like was on your radar, Jay. Maybe it's not the meat of the episode, but it definitely was a wow moment, I thought, was the Ozymandias play.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, go ahead, Jay.
No, I think that story, or Watchmen's kind of origin story, is this really moving story. It was moving in the comics. I thought it was one of the more moving elements of Zack Snyder's film. And to replay it here in this show, and the way that they did it was really compelling. And I think we kind of mentioned there it seems to be this connection between Ozymandias and Dr. Manhattan from first week, where he's building the castle that Ozymandias is living in. And then there's just now how Topher's connected that somehow, because that was the model that he was making with the hover magnet things, whatever those were. And yeah, I just think it was this really kind of dark comedy play that kind of happened where one is it what's his is it Philip or whatever his servant
yeah it was Philip it's Mr. Phillippers
Mr. Phillips and just yes. basically yeah burning him alive to elicit emotion out of the woman,
which was great acting, I think.
But it reminded me of, this might be, it's a spoiler, but it's an older movie, but what was that Chris Nolan movie where it's a magician, and I'm blanking on the name of it. But anyway, the guy just kind of makes, he's making copies of himself, and he kills the copy, or it could be the original, every single time he does the play or the show. And it reminded me of that. I think The Prestige was the movie.
That's
right.
And but anyway, great film if you haven't seen it. But and well, no, if I did to. Spoil it, it happened like over a decade ago, so chill. But it did very much remind me of that. So, you know, I think clones is the main thing that we're thinking here. It could just be a little aside. I don't know if it connects directly to the main story, these clones that he has, or seemingly clones that he has. But
he has a purpose for him, because he even mentions, like, oh, that'll come in handy later or something like that when they're taking the body away.
He says, well, when they I thought it was funny when they just drop it.
Yeah. Yeah. No emotion whatsoever. They have no connection.
Now, is that why they were covered to get, was a, them being the people, the stage hands, where they were all covered? Yeah. They had hoods over there. Was that just for our, not probably to spoil that these people are, they could possibly be clones or something like that?
Or maybe they're not ready to come forward as that character?
Yeah, exactly.
Like they're lesser or something. I mean, he didn't promote the next Mr. Phillips until they were revealed to be somebody different.
That's true, yeah.
There was a mention of, you know, in the play there, she says something about the lock being like Gordian's knot, which the Ozymandias character, like that was his thing. Is that he would leave criminals in a Gordian's knot. Like that was his little tell, you know, like the cops came and they were like, oh, you know, Ozymandias left this criminal because it's tied in the Gordian's knot. So I thought that was kind of an interesting, like, little call out to his character, and the history of his character. I also thought it was interesting that he has a tomato tree.
Yes.
Yeah.
and if anybody's grown tomatoes, I mean, like, sometimes the plant itself can be really strong, you know, like, so I just was kind of wondering, like, how pungent that tomato tree is.
Well, the leaves are poisonous, right? And that's why they thought tomatoes were poisonous for the longest time. which made whoever ate the first tomato one of the bravest person peoples in the world, but turned out to make a pretty good sauce out of it. So I love tomatoes, but I know watching Colleen hates them. So when she saw him biting, she was like, ugh, why would anyone do that? But I do think maybe there is a connection there to why is it a tomato tree, and, you know, its history as kind of a potentially deadly but delicious fruit or whatever it is.
Well, here's another outside of the box kind of thinking about his character. Like, do we know if he's living on Earth? Like, could he be in a snow globe that Manhattan's created and imprisoning him? And
that's a good call.
I don't know. I mean, I'm
just the newspaper said V was dead, so there is something at play there where he isn't within the normal realm of what people view as reality.
Right. Yeah. Because I was wondering, like, well, where is he? I mean, obviously he's rich enough that he could buy a plot of land and be, you know, off alone, you know, and on an island. But definitely some odd things happening with his character. There was a scene, so the transition scene that happened, they zoomed in on this painting at Judd's wife's house. Mm-hmm. And I got really tripped up because I was like, who is the painter of this painting? Like, it was just like this really dumb moment for me where I
thought it was Matt.
And for those listening that don't know, Matt is a art teacher and a fantastic painter. So probably this is more your expertise
Thank you.
That was my first thought that it was you, Matt.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. But no, and I've also studied Native American art as well as the paintings that, so it was kind of in my wheelhouse there where I was like, wait, who is, I know this artist. So anyway, for, I know no one that is really interested in finding this out, but I still looked it up. It's most likely that painting's by George Catlin. So
any interesting tidbits about that artist that could be relevant to our story?
Just that he was one of the first Americans that went into he lived with Native Americans and actually observed their culture firsthand and painted them firsthand. So there was only a handful of, I mean, artists that did that early on. And there's tons of artists that have come afterwards and depicted and imagined what life would have been like, but he observed their life firsthand. So, other than that, I thought for a second that it was Karl Bodner, who was a German that, came to America to observe Native Americans, roughly about the same time, but his style is different. So it led me on a wild goose chase where I'm trying to watch the show and I'm like Googling. So anyway, sorry to derail this.
I think it's interesting. I think it's one of those things that just adds more layers to the show.
It's Lindelof, there's always clues.
Exactly.
Yeah. From books to paintings, you know, it is there. But anyway, that was my little tidbit there where I was like,
there's no throwaway scenes.
Well, yeah, the view of that painting led to the kind of the Ozymandias play, the Watchmaker.
That is true, right? And maybe in that idea that maybe he's living in another realm.
Yep. Or did it tie into Angela's story where, you know, she is up close or observing, you know, maybe the people that a group of people that she isn't a part of or something. I don't know.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's yeah. Maybe. She is not one of them, but she is in the middle of observing them.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. No, I think that's a great call out, for sure.
Good job, Matt.
Gentlemen, any other, let's close out with some final thoughts here on the episode. We do have some listener feedback. We do have a call to get to. So, but before we get into that, final thoughts on the second episode of Watchmen.
I just wanted to mention because we didn't which was the American Hero story as well. Yes. We got a little glimpse of that and how brutal it was. I thought it was funny of like how they're warning us about how graphic it is. And of course, Topher's just watching it like, yeah, whatever. it was telling the story of Hooded Justice. So that was really, really cool. I think that was, I don't know if I have a way to summarize this episode because I just absorb it as fast as I can right before we podcast. And I'm loving it. I love all the nuance. I love all of the characters. And I'm excited for Sundays now. That's the thing is like it's got me excited to watch a show that I can really sink my teeth into. So,
yep, I agree. Jack, your thoughts?
Enjoyed it. It might have answered some questions, but also gave us a lot more questions. You know, I'm kind of obsessed with Will right now on what he is and what the deal is with him. So until we get answers to that, I might be a little nuts, but that's just me.
You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts.
I mean, I just think there's something there that hopefully we'll find out soon.
Well, very good. All right, that is what we thought about this episode. Now it's time to go to what you thought. It's now time for listener feedback.
Listener feedback.
All right, it's listener feedback time. We do have a phone call, so let's let it roll. Here we go.
Hello, Jack, and two interchangeable other guys. This is Jared from Missouri. Was very glad to see that you guys were doing more Damon Lindelof shows. So, of course, I had to get on board, start watching The Watchmen, and I have a theory of the week. I think that Adrian Veidt is not living in the same universe as the rest of our characters. That is why he's been officially pronounced dead. I think it has something to do with the raining of squids. Also, probably has something to do with why they keep having the same castle that he's living in and constructed and tore down. Exactly how those connect, I don't know. But for right now, my theory, as stated already, Adrian Veidt does not live in their universe. Thank you very much, Jay and Jack. Oh, I said Jack's name. I meant to say Jack and two other interchangeable guys. And until next week, talk to you later. Bye.
Oh, Jack, how much did you pay Jared for this phone call?
I don't know, but that should be the title of the show.
I love, and again, Jared, thank you for calling in. This call came in while we were recording our recap, but I love how, you know, he... as well as our crew here, we're kind of coming to the same conclusion. I think, Matt, you really drove that conversation around if Adrian Veidt, a.k.a. Ozymandias, is in this world or not. But they're alluding to something. We just don't know exactly what it is yet. And Jared, I think it's a very plausible theory.
I think Jared is spot on.
I think this interchangeable... He's my favorite caller. I think this interchangeable listener feedback person. I'm just so happy that you know they seconded what I said, and I said it before they said it. but no, thanks seriously, Jared, for calling in, and for anyone that gives us feedback. It's always good to have more voices to the you know mystery, I should say.
Also, something I didn't even like while we were talking about the painting, but the episode title is called Martial Feats of Comanche Horsemanship. Is that the title of that painting?
I did not find the title of that painting, so okay. I just was...
But it seems like that would tie in directly to what that painting is, so...
You would think so.
Well, I thought of it as Martial Feats as one thing, and then Comanche... What was it?
Comanche Horsemanship.
Horsemanship, yeah. So maybe it is a title of that painting. I did not find that painting specifically, and I guess I could have Googled that name to see if that came up with George Catlin associated with it. But by all means, the listeners can do that now that they can hear this podcast and maybe put two and two together.
Which it might be at the point, like, again, we record this right after the episode goes, but it might be to the point where that is so obvious that that is the title of the painting that people are like, well, duh, that's what it is. But right. To us here and while recording this now, it's something that's come to our attention.
Yeah, and if I'm completely wrong about the artist, like, I'm sorry. Like,
it's only your profession.
Don't beat yourself up.
It's only your profession. Don't take it personal.
Thanks. But I mean, I that's what it looked like to me. That's what I heard.
All right. Well, again, thank you, Jared. If anybody else wants to send in feedback, number is 385-309-0311.
Anyone but Ethan.
And send an email to watchmanjjm@gmail.com. All right. I think that'll do it for this week's Watchmen with Jack and Matt. Until next time, I guess I shouldn't close this out already, but give us a call, send an email, join our Facebook group, facebook.com/JandJackGroup. Join our Patreon page at patreon.com/JandJack. We want to especially thank some of our patrons, Tack from Tokyo, Eckhart Richter, Maggie the Magnificent, Joanne with the Plan, Drake the Destroyer, and Ed the Creepy Mailman. Thank you to all of our patrons. You can find a full list on our website at jandjack.com. Check out all of our other podcasts, jandjack.com/iTunes. As well as just on jandjack.com. One's going on right now is Dancing with the Stars, Survivor with Jay, Jack, and Colleen, this show, and Ramblecast After Dark and The Broadcast. As always, thank you to the co-hosts of this show. Matt, you are a shining light in an otherwise squid-covered world. And Jack, thank you as well for being, as according to Jared, the only name-worthy podcaster on this podcast. We'll see you all next time. Hasta luego, and goodbye.
Bye.
Great show, kids. One and an Eggman.